Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, why don't you just say your names and your titles really fast?
I'm Ellen Scherer Crafts, producer on Street Gang, How We Got to Sesame Street.
I'm Trevor Crafts, producer on Street Gang.
And I am Marilyn Negrello, director.
And of course, they mentioned it, but we are here talking Street Gang, How We Got to Sesame Street, a brand new documentary about the creation of Sesame Street in theaters in the DC area, April 30th. And then it'll hit, you know, streaming on demand May 7th. So, hey, thanks so much for joining us, everybody.
Oh, no worries.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
I know Sesame Street just celebrated a big anniversary, a couple years ago, and then they got honored at the Kennedy Center honors even there. We interviewed Big Bird and Elmo and everyone at the Kennedy Center. But why do you think now the time is ripe? Why are we now looking back and appreciating everything that show's done?
Well, I feel as though we're actually in a great moment to tell this story because we're in a similar place in our society to when Sesame Street debuted. You know, people are becoming aware of certain things. There's a lot of protests and movements and race awareness and all the things that Sesame Street came out with in 1969 to help children of color in the inner city integrate with others and to present a world that people wanted to live in. I think it's a great moment to have right now.
Yeah, and I to echo that, I also think that we, looking back on the origin story of Sesame Street and this group of individuals that came together with a shared purpose and intention to do good in the world using creativity, good in the world for children, right? Using creativity in the new medium of television, it's such a positive and affirming message. And I know that I personally need lots of positive and affirming messages in my life these days. And we think that audiences will really respond to and enjoy looking at something that they think they know very well and understanding it from this perspective of how it began. And we hope you are inspired by that.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think that's gonna come across for sure. I'm gonna get into Jim Henson in a second because you know that's the name synonymous with it. But before we even get to him, before he was even brought on board, explain how this came from it was born out of like the late 60s, right? There's this awakening activism happening in the country. Explain those three socially conscious people involved with, you know, what is it? Joan Ganz Cooney and Sesame Workshop co-founder Lloyd Morissette. I guess it was really those two. Explain how they got this whole thing off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's funny. Lloyd came downstairs one day, one morning, and saw his daughter, Sarah, staring at the test pattern of a television, just waiting for the television to start. Because it wasn't always 24 hours. You know, there was a period of time where it only aired for a certain period of time a day. And he sort of was struck by that. He was a psychologist and he really thought that maybe there was a way to sort of harness the addictive nature of television and do something good with it. And he was at a dinner party one night and
at Joan's house.
At Joan's house, and they were friends, and he sort of asked the question, you know, could television be used to teach children? And Joan's reply was, I have no idea, but I would love to find out. And that really started this journey. You know, Joan was a documentary television producer and was very, you know, socially conscious, very interested in the civil rights movement. And this sort of was the jump off point, which started a you know, research project from that really Joan spearheaded, which turned into the Children's Television Workshop. And that's when the rest of the gang was brought on
by Joan.
She
assembled the gang.
That's when John Stone, who was the first director and writer, head writer, and really one of our unsung heroes of the film, came on, and then he brought on Jim Henson and Joe Raposo and a lot of the other gang. So it was definitely a magical moment where everybody came together to really do something that was good and ultimately changed the entire world.
Awesome. Yeah, you mentioned Jim Henson, and I love that part where they first bring him in for the meeting and they're like, who's that hippie sitting over there? Yeah. That's Jim Henson. Talk about how you know, he didn't even set out to make children's stuff. I love that you guys show sort of that edgier, violent, I don't want to say South Parky, but you know what I mean? Like, it was a little edgier, almost maybe Looney Tunes, Acme, Anvils, blowing up people kind of stuff. And then he shifted and embraced this entire children's thing. And by the way, a graduate of University of Maryland here in our area. There's a bench, there's a park bench with him and Kermit there that you can, that you can sit on, where he basically invented his own major. I mean, they were like, who's this puppets guy? Do your own thing, invent your own major, and boom, here we go. So but yeah, speak to Henson a little bit, how pivotal he was.
So we were thrilled, first of all, to be able to show this incredible footage of Sam and Friends, this 5-minute late night comedy show that he had, which was almost had a cult following. A lot of college students watched it, and it was so out there. And then when he became a commercial director, and I mean, in the late 50s and early 60s, you had coffee commercials with these Muppets beating each other up, and it was such a fresh take on everything. And, you know, he was a very edgy guy. He did experimental films. He really had a vision that no one else had presented before. And when he was approached to do a kids show, it was not what he had in mind. It was not what he wanted to do. But the spirit of this group that was forming and the creativity that they were operating under, and, you know, the purpose of what they were doing. Jim had 5 kids, you know, he really wanted, and for the first time in his life was presented with an opportunity to actually do something for kids. By the way, something that would also launch his career in a spectacular fashion. Yeah. And it was a win for him. It was a win for all of them to acquire his talents on the show.
Yeah, and the methodology of the show was to use, this is what Joan had observed in part of this research, was that using, like, children were remembering jingles of beer commercials, right? We show this in the film. And that's where she had this idea that you could use television for learning, because this repetition and the fact that children were remembering the jingles. And this is what Jim was doing. He was doing commercials.
He was the ad man, yeah.
So he loved this idea of using this Madison Avenue techniques, you know, to do, to pull through the education. So it was just a wonderful synergy.
Take me into the creation of some of these iconic characters, because, man, with the exception of, you know, maybe Walt Disney, I mean, there's so many. I mean, you can talk to anyone down on the street, a stranger, and they could probably list dozens of Sesame Street characters.
Sure.
Take me. How does the show explore, you know, the Kermits, the Big Birds, and, you know, show their evolution?
Well, it's funny because, I mean, obviously a lot of the design of the characters, that all comes from Jim. And if you know Jim's history, you know, you know that he was a creator that was always thinking, was always sketching, was always doodling, and essentially never really stopped. So the vault that he could pull from of characters was always, you know, enormous. But some of the characters that were specifically created for the show, like Kermit obviously was something that he had developed a long time ago, like Marilyn said, for Sam and Friends. And that sort of carried along with him as his sort of alter ego. But some of the other characters, you know, originally for the pilot episodes, there was no interconnection between the people that were on the street and the Muppets. Those were totally separate. When they did this sort of research with the kids were like, wow, the street is super boring and the Muppets are super engaging. And it was John Stone that said, let's put the two together. And one of the characters that was on the street was Big Bird, and the other one was Oscar. Now, Oscar, because of Jim's doodling, Oscar actually came out of a lunch that they had, that John Stone and Jim Henson had at a little restaurant called Oscar's by the Sea, which was right down the street from the workshop. And on a paper menu, you know, like placemat menu, that's where the first Oscar was born. And apparently, as legend goes, the waiter was really surly and not very helpful and kind of mean and grouchy. And that's where Oscar got his name. He was magenta when he was first sketched. He was orange when he had his first season. And then obviously turned green to what we know now, but it was really the collaboration of all of these people having characters that were designed to help represent emotional needs of kids. Big Bird obviously is the character that they can, that younger children can relate to. Oscar shows people that you can get along with someone that is grouchy and difficult, and you can still try to be friends with that person. And each one of the characters hits a specific point. So,
and there's a lovely part in the film where we have Norman Stiles, who created Count Von Count. And so, no spoilers, but if you watch that scene in the film, you will see how that character came to be, which is a very fun moment in the film.
Yeah.
I love it.
I interrupt. Just want to say we have time for one more question.
Okay, cool. Well, you mentioned a lot of the Muppet characters. Talk about how important the human characters are, and which ones you actually interview for the film. Like, I think it's really cool. You see you see clips from the children's show, obviously, but then you get to cut to an present day, current, never before seen interview with those human people that were interacting with them.
The humans are super important for a different way. For example, Emilio Delgado, who played Luis, talks about in the film how this was the first time he ever had the chance as a Mexican American to be a normal, hardworking, decent person. And all the roles he had been offered before then were, you know, a gang member, let's say. And the same with Sonia Manzano. Sonia's Puerto Rican. She had been stereotyped in most of the roles she had gone for. And then on Sesame Street, she is allowed to be herself, just this young, wonderful, charming young woman. And none of this had been seen on television before. Gordon is a hardworking Black man who is in a very stable marriage, who they own the brownstone. You know, this was a real sea change in how characters of color were presented to America and to children especially.
Exactly. And when we see that as children, you know, me, everybody else, we take that in as our reality. So
yep.
The show almost remade the world as it wanted to be. It made that through all of our eyes, through that little box in our living rooms, the TV set. It's amazing. And I know we got to run. So I want to say thank you for joining us, but thank you also for just making it. Again, it's called Street Gang, How We Got to Sesame Street, in DC area theaters this Friday and video on demand streaming May 7th. Hey, thanks so much, everybody.
We appreciate it. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.